Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I know there's been kind of a news-filled weekend, but before we get into the main dialogue, I have a couple of questions that I want to pose. I'd like you to think about, because I believe if you've listened to this show, you should probably be able to get and or at least understand where I'm coming from and be able to at least, I think, have the vision of where we are and where we need to be regarding these questions and regarding your answers. But getting back on track, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as 1798Part2.org as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that is pontificating, if you want to call me a pontiff, or at least purporting and asserting that this is the only constitutional solution in getting the federal government into compliance. Compliance is a key word, and I want everybody to start understanding that compliance is the necessary solution. We need people to start complying to the law. We need people to more specifically comply to the Constitution. More specifically, we need the laws to align and comply with the Constitution. We need across-the-board compliance. And so if you followed my Mobius Strip Press page, you would have saw that little meme that was thrown out there regarding the only thing we need from our public servants is for them to understand and comply, or, you know, compliance. And so I just asking everybody to start repeating that word after me, compliance. Go ahead and say it, compliance. There we go. I also have, I'm going to be providing you with Madison's reflection on the convention regarding the ratification debates. Now, if you never heard of this little letter that he wrote, then it's definitely an eye-opening letter, because, again, it gives a reflection on his perspective of the Constitutional Convention and where we were as a nation in 1821 and where we needed to go or needed to be and or focus on. And so with that, let me also state that I do have the crowdfunding page and campaign that's up. I know it's it languished for about 3 months when I really got the campaign all edited and saved and so forth. It literally took me practically 3 months to get everything done so that they would release it as a campaign regarding the funding and so forth. So it is there. If you want to go check it out, you can. You're more than welcome to. And so that would be at GoFundMe and just search for Reclaiming the Republic. That's all you've got to do, Reclaiming the Republic, and it'll come up with my page and some other page that has nothing to do with Reclaiming the Republic or anything Republic political kind of thing. I also have the obligatory groveling here, and if you are willing to contribute some time and effort, if you've got a phone and you've got a computer and a little bit of time, it doesn't take much, and you can, you know, just work as you go. But we're going to really start needing more people. And so hopefully we can get this to a point where I'd hate to think that this revolution has to be a paid revolution. But in all honesty, Washington couldn't get people to fight for nothing. He had to go to Congress and say, we have to offer some level of compensation. And after that revolution, it was literally pulling teeth to get the states to fulfill their obligation and get the Continental Congress to fulfill their obligation as well. It just, I don't get it. I don't understand why I know there's lots of people that want to help, but some people just can't. And then there's these others that need to support the help, but they just won't. And so anyway, this is nothing new, obviously. This is what you go through every time everybody's complaining. They know we need change. The elephant in the room is very obvious. We're all walking around it. And so what do? Well, I'm just going to continue groveling and continue to work with all of those who continue to, you know, send me an email, get involved and say, I want to be a part of this. And so that could be you. And if that is, just send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. There's another organization. I've told you about them, constitutionclub.ning.com. If you go there, check it out. Actually, I would just recommend just joining. Then you can become a member. I'm hoping that as more people join this, that we will be able to get a good front on moving against the 17th Amendment and getting states to start creating an awareness towards the Guarantee Clause, which, oh, by the way, the Guarantee Clause just happens to be one of those clauses that is very news relevant today. And, oh, speaking of news, I did scan the news, and I, as I always do on my daily basis, is there any sign that the federal government is going to relinquish any of its unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers? I say not. And I'm not trying to be clairvoyant, but I just never, we cannot imagine, and I cannot envision them ever relinquishing any of their powers willingly. We are going to have to literally rip those from their cold, dead hands, if I can use, who is that? Charlton Heston. Yeah, that metaphor that he used when he was with the NRA. And so I will just say that that's one of the reasons why you really do need to get involved. You need to become a part of this. And so ways you can do that is by, one, listening to the show, telling other people to start listening to the show. And you can also get other people and yourself engaged and, you know, start working in the Constitution Club. Just start doing things that can actually position you to actually be able to be a part of the solution instead of a part of the problem. And let me tell you what we got in store for you tomorrow, though. I mentioned this on Friday. I kind of went over this real quick. I have an interview with John Burberry out of Wyoming. He's going to give us the backstory regarding Matthew Shepard. Some of you may have forgotten who Matthew Shepard was, but he was the one that was murdered, I believe, in 1998. And he was the one tied to the fence post and supposedly, you know, brutally left to die because he was homosexual. Well, there's a better story, and there was an investigative journalist, and he's going to tell this story, and you're going to want to tune in because it is incredible what he's going to tell you. And, oh, by the way, I also mentioned that there was a young man, and I forgot his name already, but if you went out and Googled, if you start Googling young or teenagers that have been murdered by homosexuals or what have you, you will not find it. Google has been filtering, and their filters are working really, really good. And so we will talk about that young man as well. There was a young man, I think, just shortly after Matthew Shepard was tied to that fence post. It was maybe a month or two later. This poor young 13-year-old, and I believe it was in Kansas, where he was abducted by two homosexuals, and he literally brutalized him and molested him for a couple of days, and he ended up dying from a reaction to drugs that they were giving him, as well as the gag that they kept in his mouth. He ended up choking or something. And anyway, that whole news story was suppressed, and it's being suppressed by Google as well. So anyway, something to think about. Another thing to think about is, as we keep on hearing the left and the propaganda machine continue to push, every time there's some form of gun violence, they keep on pushing gun control. Gun control has historically been proven to only cause more violent crimes and more criminal behavior, because once the populace has been disarmed, and Halbrook, and there's quite a few people that have written regarding gun control and the empirical data that you can just go through the past 1,000 years, 2,000 years of societies that have literally disarmed their people and what ends up happening. And I know this is all kind of on the heels of some of the violence in the past few days from the synagogue, the Riverside nightclub down in California, and the North Carolina Butler High School. What is the problem? What is the real problem that we're facing? Do we really believe that guns are the problems? Because, you know, we have all sorts of things that seem to be the, you know, like alcohol. Alcohol kills far more people. Are we going to just ban alcohol? No, the problem, and I will stick to this, the problem is education. They have been debasing our society for so long that people just have no morals anymore. You don't get away with getting and telling people to embellish in their carnal desires, whatever it is, go do it for 60 years or 70 years almost. You don't get away with just doing that and then not having consequences. And so we are on a fast decline of debasing ourselves, because the how low can you go? It seems to be the drive for every single following year, you know, for kids getting out of high school or what have you. It just seems like it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And so until we start demanding that they end and we take back our education system and start changing our culture, we are going to continue facing more of this, and they're going to continually squeak, 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 get rid of the guns. And as they do that, what you'll find is that they will finally get to a point where either we will surrender or we will have to boil to a point where we have to fight back. And so hopefully that's what we're doing this coming election, is fighting back and getting more good constitutional conservatives in office. But I've got to go, so I'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614. Or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614, or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so, just to close my thought, I have been harping for a long time that our education system has a very intricate weaving of godlessness and immorality throughout its curriculum. And they all support all of the underlying messages and tones that actually are designed to undermine our constitutional republic and the fundamental foundation that our framers had instilled in this republic. And so until we take back the schools and until we get the schools to actually educate instead of social engineer, The social engineering is what we are reaping in all of these different events, whether they be those fake pipe bombs, which I still believe has some connection to the deep state. I mean, you know, come on, this guy knew all of these people's addresses and the lack of postage markings and so forth. I mean, there's just more and more that's proving that there was some type of collusion within the deep state for this to occur. And with that, let me just kind of go back on, because if you listened on Friday, I covered the Democratic National Platform. I kind of went through, I didn't read it, but I kind of went through what they were pinging for. They wanted to promise everything under the sun, that they could literally deliver everything. I mean, Benjamin Franklin and I believe Thomas Jefferson and a few framers literally said, a government that can give you everything is a government that can take everything from you. And so as I put out that platform, apparently there's a lot of Democrats that are proud of that platform, because all they wanted to do was defend it with me. And they just sent me insults and or BS buttons or what have you in social media and so forth. So it is what it is. And so I hope that you at least are seeing through or reading between the lines that they are literally looking to subjugate us into a communistic type of government. And that's bottom line. Just like I've told you with the scale of liberty, you've got on one extreme complete liberty, and you've got on the other end subjugation. The people that are willing to do violence and willing to do whatever they think is necessary for their cause are not people on the extreme end of liberty. If you are a person that believes people should be free to choose what they should do for themselves and the decisions that they need to make, then you're on that side of liberty. If you're on that side of, we need to take these guns, we need to start controlling people, we need to be in control, that is the side of subjugation, and that is the side of the left. True, right-thinking people want people to be free to choose and to discuss the debates, follow the laws, and you believe if people violate the laws, there are consequences and they need to be prosecuted. That's it. You never take the law into your own hands and literally to go out and kill somebody and take away their freedom of choosing and being able to, you know, finally get it and make the right decision. You never want to stop somebody's opportunity to progress and do the right thing. And so I'm just trying to make it very, very clear that anybody that wants to either make a bomb, pull a trigger, whatever the mayhem is they want to unleash, that is not a person that is on our side of the scale of liberty. They do not care about liberty. They care about literally cause and effect, and literally the end justifies the means in their actions is what they're trying to do. And so I also thought I would kind of poke into this I know Hillary's on this tour, and if you haven't noticed, I mean, she's clearly out there saying that, you know, she's not looking to run for president, but she is definitely floating that comment out there, because she is basically saying, yeah, I think I'd like to be president. I'd like to be president. But she's saying she's not running. What she's basically doing is she's begging the left to please come back, please, or at least trying to validate herself into being the least or the far less what do you want to call it? What's the best word for it? The fact that Hillary has been basically shamed and basically has been an embarrassment on everything that she's done, and she's still trying to obfuscate all the laws that she's broken, and the fact that she's still out and not under trial and not actually under arrest just kills me. But the fact that she's still out there saying, yeah, I'd like to be president, and we're allowing this to continually be a part of this. I honestly think that there's something going on. Why is it that Trump and the Department of Justice hasn't gone after her? It's beyond me. But the fact is, and I'm just trying to put it out there, that she's either looking for some validation or that she is looking to get somebody into, you know, convincing, oh, yeah, let's let her run one more time, as if she hasn't had enough shots at it. From one failed wannabe president to an actually failed president, Jimmy Carter's poking his head in the Georgia governor race because he feels Kemp cannot be impartial as the Secretary of State since he's running for governor. And I just find that very interesting. And I told you, and this actually proves this, that the people on the left and the people on the right are wired differently. Jimmy Carter does not understand that he is actually hardwired into knowing and understanding that people will do wrong things like he does. People on the left are hardwired to do whatever is necessary. They don't understand people with actual morals. They don't understand people with conscience and why people don't do the wrong things. That's why he says he can't be impartial. Well, of course, the people on the left can't be impartial. They are, and I've told you this, they are wired hard ideologues, and they're going to continue to do anything and everything they can to further their cause. That's why I have said, and I'm a huge champion for, equaling out government regulations and government offices and so forth so that you have equal representation in the DMV. Because there's all sorts of people in the California, Washington State, and some of these other DMV institutions where they're all a bunch of practically Democrats, or I would say most of them are, especially in these blue states. And they're doing anything and everything they can to literally register illegal aliens. I can tell you that probably in Washington, I know it's over 500,000, if not 1 million, illegal aliens have been registered to vote in this state. California, it's a lot. Because you can't just let somebody go in there. And I think they said that they found that they accidentally allowed people access. There's no doubt in my mind that they've been allowing. That problem existed back when Clinton was running. And they were doing everything they can to basically get people to go do it because they knew at the DMV they would be hoodwinked and allowed to register to vote. And so it is about time we actually step in and we actually do something about that, right? So anyway, I know that Carter, you know, he means well, but he just doesn't understand. He doesn't get it because he's hardwired in believing and thinking that everybody will do the wrong thing because that's what they believe is right. A couple of other pointers I wanted to get to before we hit the hard break. Fox News is actually going to start, and they're launching this Fox Nation, if you haven't heard about this, and it's a direct spin to you where you buy prescriptions from them or a subscription. Just like CRTV, just like what Glenn Beck did with The Blaze and so forth. They believe that you're willing to pay for internet access because more and more people are dropping television and they're literally going. I mean, most kids today are literally getting almost all of their information via the internet, Netflix and so forth, and they're not using regular cable carriers. And so as we think that radio may be dying, actually, TV carriers and or cable is probably starting to see a big drop in their subscriptions. And so I will throw this out here because this actually just points to how we have created an environment or a culture where corporations have actually been able to manipulate and or control government. And in this particular case, GM, General Motors, is now asking the government to basically create a single national gas mileage standard instead of allowing the states to do this. And there, because if you didn't know, South Dakota actually threw everybody under the bus and demanded that the federal government start regulating sales tax. And that's why every internet site and everybody that's doing business on the internet has to start collecting sales tax for the destination state. In other words, without passing a law, the Supreme Court ruled that the federal government will have to do that. Isn't that great? And you didn't even know it. And if you tried to go to an online website that said, we don't charge sales tax, they don't do that anymore. They're literally going after anybody that is doing business over the internet. And if you're not charging sales tax, they will literally, you know, fine you to death and or throw you in jail or what have you. But General Motors, in this particular case, they're actually trying to mandate zero emission vehicles. In other words, they're trying to push the federal government into forcing everybody, all these other manufacturers, into making electrical cars. I'm going to tell you, within the next couple of years, a paradigm shift will occur where all of a sudden your need for an electrical car will completely go away and it will never resurface for thousands and thousands of years if mankind lives that long. There is that big of a paradigm shift coming, and you heard it here first. That is correct. And there's that hard break. So perfect timing, right? I will be back right after word from my sponsor and from my promo. Thank you very much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So let me close on this Government Motors or General Motors, whatever you want to call them. The only reason they're stepping in, and the only reason that they're actually trying to persuade and get the federal government into picking a very specific market space and trying to get them to create these standards and creating these demands. In other words, apparently the free market can't shift fast enough because the demand just isn't there for these electric cars. Bottom line, my friends, General Motors and all corporations have no business going and petitioning the federal government into trying to do these types of things. It's the same thing with, if you understand the federal government has these hard, limited constitutional boundaries, they have no, this is about as unconstitutional as can be. And even though it may seem like General Motors might be the real noble corporation out there by trying to be the green company, they are strictly being self-serving putts is what they're being, because that's exactly what they're trying to do, is they're trying to improve the market space for themselves, period. And so it just makes me sick. And the fact is that the government allows this type of stuff because, bottom line, it is not within their jurisdiction. The government, you know, once we get compliance, like I said at the very beginning of the show, once we start getting compliance, all of these corporations and all of these self-serving people will just, they'll go away, because they'll realize that there's no more doors that are going to open and drop crumbs out for them to, you know, billions of dollars of our taxpayer expense anymore. There's the fleecing of the American people at the expense of the public purse is going to go away once we get compliance. Now, let me give you some good news. There's a guy by the name of Albert Lixey out of Pittsburgh, who actually retired. He actually dropped out of high school. He started working as a shoe shiner in 1981. And he's actually retired because of the types of tips and gratuity that he made at this children's hospital. I think it's the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. And so it's one of those stories that say you can't be successful if you drop out. No, if you work hard and you get out there every day, you can actually, you know, make it even as a shoe shiner in a children's hospital. And so there you go. A great success story. Isn't that great? Another thing you didn't hear is last week, the Supreme Court basically shielded the Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, from having to answer questions in a lawsuit challenging his decision to add citizenship to the 2020 census form. And so just to get that out there so that you understand that in the 2020 census form, remember Obama in his last census, he asked a lot of intrusive questions. Well, now they're going to start focusing on who's citizens and who aren't citizens. And hooray, that's something that they should be doing, because the whole point of the census is to be speaking to citizens, period, not non-citizens, or at least differentiating and so forth. So anyway, one last thing before I really get into, you know, some of the meaty stuff. China's got a new phone that's going to be hitting the market, and it's coming to America, and you can thank Qualcomm and T-Mobile. It's called the OnePlus, and so they're launching this 6T smartphone in the United States, and it's going to be happening soon. If you buy into this phone, then you're a fool. If you've been listening to this show and you understand what China is doing with their beast or their big government system monitoring and social credits, as well as live organ harvesting, anybody that is doing business with China and allowing China to succeed is, to me, just a fool. And if you feel otherwise and you want to brag about your smartphone, by all means, call in and we'll take that call. But we'll be civil, right? And we'll make sure that you can express why it's such a great thing in buying into Chinese technology, especially since there's a good likelihood they will roll out that beast to every other nation. And I think that that's one of the reasons why China has been mollycoddled by the United States since Nixon was president. Anyway, before I get into this Madison letter, and we've got about 6 minutes before my next break, I wanted to ask you a question. When you start looking at, you know, all of these problems, as I did my tribute to McCain, as I've done all of these other informational shows for you regarding the education system and so forth, what is really the problem in your mind? Is it the public servants, or are we just, you know, are we really that lost because of our public servants? Or maybe it is the education system. Do you believe that the problem is the education system? Or maybe the problem is the laws. Maybe we need more laws or get rid of some. Maybe it's the party. I don't know. Do you think it might be the party? Maybe it's the electorate. Now, I do know this, that as I was saying, when you get into a paradigm where you allow people to go unchecked and you allow people, especially when you allow ideologues to go unchecked with, you know, regardless of whether there's another ideologue there or not. When you don't have some type of balance and some type of checks in the system, then you are going to have problems. One of the things we did in the security domain with, you know, classified intelligence and so forth, is we had this thing called two-person integrity. And so that's one person would have one combination to the safe, and they would literally have two locks on the safe, and another person would have the combination to the other one. That means that when somebody else isn't there, then you can't open that safe. You actually have to have two people to be able to open that to gain access to crypto or very special material. Well, we need to start applying that, I believe, in, you know, lots of different things. But just want to throw it out there. You know, where do we really want to pinpoint the problems? Because one of these things is probably the bigger problem, or I should say, is the mechanism that would have been the and will be the solution moving forward. But I'll go through it again. Is it the public servants? You know, those politicians that we keep on electing, like McCain? Or is it the education system? Or is it the laws? Could it be the party? Could the party be the culprit? Or the electorate? And when I say the culprit, in other words, could the electorate, the party, the laws, the education system, or the public servants, in focusing on one of these, could they be the solution in fixing the problem? And that's the real question that I'm driving here. So if you want to cogitate, ruminate, and give that some deeper thought, by all means, do that. Get back to me, or you can even, if you want to, call in and talk about that, because I'm going to repeat this a couple of times. And that's because this is a new focus for me. I'm going to be doing a presentation coming up, and the focus is literally what is the solution and how we do this. Because believe me, there is a solution. Just like, you know, there's a solution to getting the federal government into compliance, there's a solution in making that solution applicable. And it's all about connecting the dots. Literally, that's all we have to do is connect the dots. So let me get into this letter from James Madison to John George Jackson. This letter is literally Madison's reflections on the convention of the Constitution. And more importantly, it is, you know, how he views the importance of the ratification debate. So before I actually start reading and before I go into my normal diatribe, let me kind of put this in context. Back in the days of the framers, they had contracts, and contracts were signed with a handshake. They didn't have to put it on a piece of paper and have witnesses and all of those types of things. They didn't need to do that because people had the level of character and integrity necessary to know with an assurance that they could count on that person doing their job. We do not have that today. And that's a sad thing. You may have, because I've worked with, you know, friends that are supposedly really Christian, seem like really good, but I'm telling you, at the drop of the hat, they'd take advantage of you. I had that problem myself with very specific contractors. I have that problem with doing business with people. You know, people just all of a sudden just, you know, literally run to the bottom, and just how low can they go, or how culpable can they be in, you know, not giving you what you paid for or what you deserve or what have you. And so if you put it into context of the ratification debates, Madison kind of understood the importance of relying upon what was understood during the agreement process. He completely understood that the Constitution was a contract because that's something, or a compact, because that is exactly what he referred it to. And he kept on replying to it. And so you won't be surprised if you understand this, if you understand this fact that Madison looked at the Constitution as a compact, then you will completely get, I mean, this is not going to be an epiphany. It will be a validation of exactly how Madison feels regarding how he viewed the Constitution and how it should be applied and interpreted by us even by him and them in at this point in time, because this was 1821, right? So this was 30 years after the forming, or more, actually a little more than that, 31, right? 32 years, because they formed the first government in 89. And so in 1821, this is 30 years after the forming of that government and them kind of just going ahead, you know, on the course they charted. So when we get back, I'm going to read this letter to you, and I think you're going to find it fascinating, and it will validate everything that I believe I've been saying. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so this is December 27th, and actually, I don't believe they were celebrating Christmas. I don't believe Madison looked at Christmas as a holiday. I think that they were still looking and considering Christmas as a pagan act of violence and mayhem. But anyway, this is what he says. He says, with respect to that portion of the Mass which contains the voluminous proceedings of the convention, it has always been my intention that they should someday or other see the light. And now, let's stop right here. Madison actually wrote a bunch of notes and personal journals regarding the Constitutional Convention. Those notes were never released until after he passed away. And Molly was the one, Dolly Madison was the one that actually published those. And so he goes, but I have always felt at the same time the delicacy attending such a use of them, especially at an early season. In general, I have learned the expediency of letting the publication be a posthumous one. See, he was already looking at his notes being published after he passed. The result of my latest reflections on the subject, I cannot more conveniently explain than by the enclosed extract from a letter, one confidentially written since the appearance of the proceedings of the convention, is taken from the notes of Chief Justice Yates. Of this work, I have not yet seen a copy from the scraps thrown into the newspaper. I cannot doubt that the prejudices of the author guided his pen, and that he has committed egregious errors, at least in relation to others as well as myself. that most of us carried into the convention a profound impression produced by the experienced inadequacy of the old Confederation and by the monitory examples of all similar ones, ancient and modern, as to the necessity of binding the states together by a strong constitution is certain. Now, you got to understand that they literally had no teeth in being able to pay for what the government was supposed to do. And that's why the government, the Continental Congress, was literally flapping in the wings, because the states were withholding and they were constantly not paying their debts. There were still, at this point in time, almost a decade beyond the war, there were still several states that were not paying their debts. I believe there was just a few of them that had paid their debts. So with that, let me just kind of move forward. He goes on and says, the most of us carried into the convention, the necessity of such a constitution was enforced by the gross disruptible inequalities which had been prominent in the eternal administration of the states. Nor was the recent and alarming insurrection headed by the Shays, because the Shays Rebellion in Massachusetts, without a very sensible effect on the publication mind. Such, indeed, was the aspect of things in the eyes of the best friends of liberty, and or had arrived, which was to decide whether the administration an acronym in here, AMN, whether the admission or what have you. I'm thrown on that one. Anyway, he goes on and says, experiment was to be the blessing of the world, or to blast forever the hopes which the Republican cause had inspired. And what is not to be overlooked, the disposition to give to a new system all the vigor consent with Republican principles was not stimulated by a backwardness in some quarters towards a convention for the purpose which was ascribed to a secret dislike by popular government and a hope that delay would bring it more into disgrace and pave the way for a form of government more congenial with monarchical or aristocratical predilections. And so he's really pointing out some of the things that was going on with Clinton, with Henry, and a lot of those anti-federalists that were literally not liking this new form of government. And even Hamilton, who wanted to see more of a monarch for an executive, vice the president, and the process of selecting the president with the Electoral College. There were a lot of people that did not like this new innovation of government. Moving forward, he says, this view of the crisis made it natural for many in the convention to lean more than was perhaps in the strictness warranted by the proper distinction between causes temporary, as some of the doubtless were, and causes permanently inherent in popular frames of government. It is true, as has been sometimes suggested, that in the course of discussions in the convention, where so much depended on compromise, the patrons of different opinions often set out negotiating grounds more remote from each other than the real options, or I should say, than the real opinions of either were from the point of when they finally met. In other words, he was basically saying these people were, you know, really far divided, and then all of a sudden they were able to make all sorts of ground in coming to acquiescing or agreeing on different points. And he said that it was commonly occurring at that point in time. And so he goes on and says, for myself, having from the first moment of maturing a political opinion down to the present one, and this is 30-some years of being in service, never ceased to be a votary of the principle of self-government. I was among those most anxious to rescue it from the danger which seemed to threaten it, and with that was willing to give to a government resting on that foundation as much energy as would ensure the requisite stability and efficiency. It is possible that in some instances, this consideration may have been allowed a weight greater than subsequent reflection within the convention, or the actual operation of government would sanction. It may be remarked also that it sometimes happened that opinions as to particular modification or a particular power of the government had a conditional reference to others which combined therewith would vary the character of the whole, or vary the character of the entire Constitution. And so he concludes in this last paragraph by saying, but whatever might have been the opinions entertained in forming the Constitution, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification. So I'm going to stop right there and I'm going to clarify exactly what he just said. Even though it might have been interesting to entertain all of these different opinions in what it took to form this Constitution and these different predilections, as he was talking about, all of these things that were creating these distractions of wanting a monarch and so forth, it doesn't matter, because bottom line, it was the duty, and that's what he says, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning. In other words, how they defined it during the ratification debates of the Constitution. And so it's just like a contract. When people were standing and saying, I want you to do this, 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 and this, and you go through, painfully go through all the details of what you expect to be done, and that person recites back, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to, and they completely understand, and you shake hands, at that point, that's what the expectation is. And so in the ratification debates, that is precisely what the nation understood the Constitution to be. It was a very limited government, that they had very enumerated powers, and outside of those, they had zero jurisdiction and they had zero ability to meddle with those things. That being life, that being education, that being energy, that being vehicles and cars, that being every form of commerce, it literally left them as the intermediate between disputes of commerce, not the all keeper of whether you could flush 5 gallons or 1.5 gallons in your toilet. To be very clear, they were hard limited to those enumerated powers. And so what ended up happening is that they moved forward and they lived tranquility, or I should say they lived with all sorts of, I believe, opportunities to flourish as a nation. And in those opportunities, there were evil politicians with machinations to undermine it and throw it in a direction that would serve them, just like what GM is trying to get the government to do today. And so he understood, and I'm telling you, if you understand contract law and the fundamentals of contract law way back then you should completely understand, it should not be lost to you, that when they agreed in these ratification debates that the federal government was going to be limited by these very specific things and that they had these enumerated powers, and the only way they could meddle with anything more was via an Article 5 amendment process. And so he closes and says, no one felt this obligation more than I have done, and there are few, perhaps, whose ultimate and deliberate opinions on the merits of the Constitution accord in a greater degree with that obligation. And so with that, my friends, I am G.R. Mobley, and I am reclaiming the Republic. I need your help, and we want to get it right back to what Madison and the framers had given us, a limited federal government. And with that, I'll be back tomorrow, and we will have John Burberry in a great interview with us tomorrow. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.